I tried. He didn't answer either.
It didn't ring yet.
Yes, it did. Don't give me it didn't ring yet nonsense. Thank you very much. Matthew Kressel doesn't even want to answer his Skype. I don't know why I bother.
Should I text him?
I've just messaged him on the Facebook group. If he's going to be on, he'll be monitoring that.
So I have to put up with.
Right. I didn't realize his last name was Kresselar.
Kresselar?
Kresselar, that's what she typed.
Yeah, Matthew Kresselar, are you on?
Excuse me, Deb. Kirby's having a go at you.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm used to it.
When he's the one, the one that's late. Don't
why
get this.
Why can't I bring up my notes?
Because you're not using a Mac. Let's see how long it takes for me to get my notes up. Click. Click. Yeah. Oh, they're up on the screen. Amazing.
No, wow. I rebooted the silly thing. That's so it's just taking a while.
Didn't have to reboot my computer. It's still waiting for Kirby.
I don't have thousands and thousands of dollars.
Oh, here we go. It's because of the money. You could make out the Macs are rubbish, but because they're rubbish, not because of the money side of things. This Mac I've had for 5 years, funny enough. And the other Mac next to it I've had for about 9 years. It's still going strong. How long have you had your Mac, Deb?
About 10.
Maybe. Oh, I've had mine longer than 10 years.
Yeah, actually, 12 years I've had mine.
I've had yours longer than 10 years. And the sound sounds really good there, Mary. Just like to point out.
Yeah.
10 years, pretty good, yeah. Wow. 10 years. Not bad investment, that, is it, really? 10 years, but...
Yeah, I got mine in 2007, so, yeah.
Well, good. A bit of money's worth there, I'd say, that your Mac's still working strong.
Definitely.
Yeah. What's Kirby up to?
I'm texting Matthew.
I just did.
Brilliant.
I just texted Matthew.
Well, now he's getting another text from...
He's going to be getting ticked off, not texted in a minute. Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 400, and I've forgotten. I'm Adam, and give me the book. And here's Kirby Bartlett's alone.
Two lumps, no sugar.
Mary Lang.
I'm going to do City of Death one better. Punting through Cambridge,
oh,
the doctor upon the prow.
Deary me. And Deborah Melrose.
My name does not concern you.
How apt. So this week we're going to... bloody Nora! we've been off air for 17 minutes and you decide now to interrupt me.
413.
Okay. For your information, listeners, it was 413. I thought it might be, but I thought it might be unlucky to mention the 13 bit. Yes, we're going to be looking at the long-awaited, for me personally, animated edition of... animated and live-action edition of Sharda, which is the most complete, apart from the audio version that Big Finish did a while back, the most complete version of Sharda to date.
Everybody,
everybody ready? No? Okay. I've just clicked on play and it says not permitted, so I now have to click on play main feature.
Not permitted. You mean your precious Mac did something that was...
Well, it's not the Mac, is it? It's the software that drives the DVD. So how is that the Mac? Anyway, we get a silly little sort of BBC One globe that goes on.
Oh, no, you get the proper announcement. I love that.
Yeah, it said a little... Now, late.
On BBC, we return to the TARDIS with the Doctor in Doctor Who.
Wasn't that Toby Haydock, though, doing that announcement?
It did sound like it.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. Mm. It's a joke on the fact that it's about 40 years late.
So we have the exterior shot of this think tank ship and then the bull thing in the middle of these sleepy men, one of which used to be in the Bill, one of which has got looks like a stuck-on sash. And one of them looked a bit shifty. Now, of course, that would be. And he's got a different suit on as well, which would be Skagra. So we have a little scene of countdowns with Roman numerals, and then Skagra
wakes up. Which is cool. Why not?
Why not, indeed. Then Skagra wakes up and does some evil, sinister smiles where the other chaps seem to be sort of fitting a little bit. And so dogs are just being let in at the moment. So I don't know how long that's going to last for. So he starts tweaking some little buttons and pressing some retro things, and the countdown, does it start going back up again? I can't remember now.
Yes, it does, yeah.
And when we were watching this, Fred noticed that one of the guys, he's twitching, is only moving his bottom.
Yes, yeah.
I think they call that twerking. So it does a little bit of elongated, just sort of messing around with the chaps and presses a few more buttons, and then he summons the ball, which lands in his hand.
Master? That is very clever. That's a practical effect. It's not a string. It's actually mounted on the end of a motorized car antenna that he's holding in his hand, and the clever camera angle.
Marvelous. And then he sort of with a sort of sinister smile, I suppose you'd call it, wanders.
And he does a lot of those, isn't this? Yes.
Walks through the corridor and
lots of acting.
Yeah, and then I think the ball goes on some bloke's head who goes a bit funny, and all the men in the who are left in the little think tank room start fitting again, and they get up and start wandering around aimlessly. A bit like a Saturday Night Fever, I suppose, isn't it? And then it's into the title sequence. And I was a bit disappointed. The only thing I'm disappointed about this is that it was just done as a feature-length thing rather than the six episodes.
Yeah, that disappointed me, too.
Because they could do the big thing about doing the BBC announcement thing, and then they don't do it as it should have aired. But, it doesn't matter. Then we see... what's the young chap's called again? Is it Chris?
Chris Parsons.
Don't need a second name. Chris will do nicely. Riding his little bike around, and he goes in...
Riding through cave. Yeah.
He goes in search of Professor Chronotis and finds him. Chronotis is obviously extremely eccentric. It's also been in Doctor Who before, isn't he, everybody?
Yes.
Anybody...
I thought he's going to be in Doctor Who.
He will be in Doctor Who again. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he's been in Doctor Who before.
But time is irrelevant, you know. The future is the past, is the present.
Maybe so. Anyway, so he's got a TARDIS, the TARDIS parked in his TARDIS.
Yeah, look, he just sort of looks at it and goes, oh, yeah, okay.
Master.
Oh, God, 6 minutes in. Oh, we're going to get through a six-part story. Yes, Kirby.
He has not been in yet. This is his first of three stories.
Oh, hang on.
He is the Keeper of Traken.
I know he's the Keeper of Traken, Deb.
And then he's in...
Sorry.
He's in Time Lash as a fake Borad, whatever that means, since I haven't seen Time Lash.
Oh, yeah. I remember that, too. Okay. Well done for... you should thank me for allowing you to correct me.
Thank you for allowing... me to correct you.
Anyway, Chris asks the professor if he can borrow some books. I can't quite remember what he's researching at this point.
It's like particle physics or something like that.
Oh, by the way,
I thought it was carbon dating.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to type something on the Facebook thread. Keep comments coming. Shada. That's not how you spell comments. I've got a buzz come through on my phone. Oh, it's too close to the microphone. Oh, no, where is it? Oh, it's not. It's on my bin. Shada. Comments, not comments. Because I don't spell it correctly, Kirby will pick on me. Right, no. So... yeah, so Glorinix says, wah! When I said about the technical issues... And then we got the iconic... I've got a burp coming, sorry. The iconic scene that was in The Five Doctors of the Doctor punting through Cambridge. Punting through Cambridge.
Punting through Cambridge now.
Here we go again. Yes, Kirby.
Have you or Debbie ever been to Cambridge?
No.
Yes.
Oh, you would be. You're intellectual, Deb. No, I haven't, though.
So have you punted?
No, but I have punted in Oxford.
Do you think that everybody in Cambridge will have punted? Like, it's like everybody, yes. Everybody in Venice would have punted.
Yeah, I looked around Cambridge and I looked around Oxford and I punted while I was at Cambridge. Oxford, sorry.
Okay.
That would be the first thing I would do if I ever go to Cambridge.
You know, I had meetings at the uni, so I had to go and do them first.
I would love to see Kirby up on a boat punting. What a picture.
Oh, it's been
I would find Tim Drury and have him show me around all of the spots, since he does an annual Shada tour.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. Right, so anyway, he drops the punt, and I love the shot of over the bridge, the Skagger with his ridiculous hat. And his,
I like his cloak.
Very funny costume.
Master.
Doing his senator smile, and he's holding something in what looks like a carpet. Yes.
When we look down at the doctor and he loses the pole, he goes under the bridge, and then the next scene, he's lost the pole and he goes under the bridge again. So he goes under the same bridge twice.
Oh, okay. I thought what was quite interesting, I remember when I watched this a couple of weeks ago now, obviously he's sort of Skagra's leaning over the wall, watching the doctor go through with the... Oops, just dropped my magic wand. I just dropped the elder wand.
They hear the voices, don't they, as well?
Yeah, but as he turns away on the bridge, there's a couple of balls on the top of the bridge, which I thought was quite interesting. What?
Nothing, I was being rude.
That's unusual. Well, and the doctor, meanwhile...
I'll do a little interject here, like Kirby. Yeah. What I read was that the reason that Adams set this story in Cambridge is because he's from Cambridge, and he said that that's the one place where someone dressed like Skagra would not be remarked upon by anybody.
Well, like people doing barbershop singing just haphazardly in the middle of the road, you know.
Yeah. Kind of stuff that's pretty normal in Cambridge.
And yet when there's the one scene of Skagra walking down the road and one student does turn and look at him.
Probably just to admire the amazing.
Yeah. I probably want to know who his tailor is.
Very 1970s, isn't it, the suit he's wearing?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a funny noise. What was that? Right then, where do we go next? Oh yeah, so he's it's not a carpet, it's a bag that looks like a carpet. That's what
it's
he's carrying.
It's a carpet bag like Mary Poppins.
Yes. The doctor, meanwhile, rows himself and Romana
badly
along the River Cam. Some lovely what would you call it? Cinematographic work in this episode. Which is ironic considering the next scene is a cartoon scene of Chris riding his bike. It gets me that this thing, though, they've done it in cartoon, where nowadays cartoons are very rare now, aren't they? It's all sort of 3D computer graphics.
Yes, I was watching a Monsters High thing earlier and it was all 3D and I was like, what happened to cartoons?
Yeah, well, there it is. There's the cartoon. You only get it in Doctor Who now. Or maybe in anime.
What you mean, you're referring to 2D animation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everything that used to be made in animation, now they're remaking in live action. So who's going to...
I hate that too.
Yes,
they're doing Battle of the Planets. I can't believe
it. You said 2D animation. All animation is 2D to a certain extent, even with 3D graphics, because it's on 2D screen. What I'm trying to say is that this is... it's like it's drawn. It's like a cartoon, as in comic cartoon type thing, isn't it? You don't see a lot of that, apart from Marvel's own, you know, cartoons and maybe DC's own cartoons that they make into an animation. And perhaps, I did mention it just a few moments ago, wasn't it? Cartoons. Anime. Things like that.
I love anime.
You don't get... That's really the only thing you ever seen drawn now in normal animation or a film. Anyway, so Chris arrives in a lab eventually. And he's got a book. And he's...
Like the way they did that, actually.
What?
The way he experiments with the book, even though it was obviously on, you know, obviously animated, it was quite a good scene with the setup.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, there's an extra that where they did live filming for figuring out how to do that, and you can see someone with a green glove moving the book around. So they sort of did rotoscoping.
So what we didn't say, so when he gets into the lab, he puts the book down and walks over to the window, and the book slides itself off a pile of books and opens up. Of course, when Chris goes and looks at the book, the clock in the background then winds itself forward a couple of hours. And then, of course, with that scene's done, you obviously see the mysterious writing, which we in the future of discover
Master.
Ancient Gallifreyan. This is episode one. My God. Yeah, go on.
When the book falls off that pile of books.
Yes.
The book it's sitting on is called Zaphod, My Stories.
Is it?
Cool.
Now, in the Ian Levine version, there's a Nutramat drinks machine in the background this.
There is?
Yeah, not in this version. In the animated version that Ian Levine made several years ago.
Okay, thank you for that. Right, so the Doctor and Romana, meanwhile, make their way to Chronotis's office, where the TARDIS is, and, of course, the Doctor...
Where they meet up with Billy Bunter.
I was just about to write Point Deductive. I was just about to say that. You can't hear that, the listeners will. stealing my thunder. I think I should double stealing thunder points.
Well, you, Master.
Yes.
I should get a point for being an American who knows who that is.
No, you shouldn't. Right then, yeah, so he meets Billy Bunter.
Nice try, Kirby.
And
it's
makes
like
his way.
I know what the Goon Show is. How many Americans?
God, how many times have you mentioned that on the show? Right.
I know, that's getting very old, Kirby.
Oh dear.
The Doctor and Romana go in and have a cup of tea and a couple of lumps of milk with their right friend.
Oh God! no milk for me, please. Thank you, Colin.
Meanwhile, Skagra is wandering around Cambridge, standing out like a sore thumb.
The guy looks back at him.
Yes, he just noticed that. and then, of course, there'll be... And then there's a bit where Chronotis tells the Doctor he lends a young lad some books. And then, I think, obviously, they know he's a Time Lord, don't they? Because they sort of tell him off a little bit for just passing on a few random old books to somebody. And meanwhile, Chris in the starts doing some testing on the book, x-raying it, and then did he not like try and burn it? Why would you want to burn it?
I mean, stab it a couple of times.
Yeah, but if he wants to learn about what the book has, why would you try and burn it?
So, just threatening it, you know.
That makes no sense. You know, he's got a book. He's got obviously it's what we'd call an archaeological find in some ways. So what you do, let's see if we can set fire to it. Great idea. Anyway, so he does some runs some tests on it. I did like the seal of Rassilon on the back of it. That was quite good.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
And
really, we're so amazed we both had a seal of Rassilon on our arms, wasn't he?
Yeah, so he was even more amazed to find out that I got mine before yours, Debbie. Skagra hijacks a car randomly for no particular reason. I do love the
clothes,
the background stuff in these watching these clips and the shops and thing. And in one of the shop windows looks like a robot. Well, I think it might be an odd reflection. And the clothes. What clothes?
Well, the clothes off the guy in the car.
Oh yeah, he does indeed. But no, it's just I didn't know. I was just looking at the shops in the background, the KP Camera Shop and AE Clothier and stuff like that. It's just quite fascinating to see the retro shops that probably aren't there anymore. Chris, meanwhile...
Master?
Grief. Yes?
On the older DVD, the one that's got the version with Tom Baker in the museum.
Yes.
There's an extra there of a then and now.
How is that?
Where they go to a lot of these locations.
Oh.
And a lot of
a lot of the
shops have, of course, changed. And I'm sure, and that was 10 years ago, I believe, when that DVD came out. So I'm sure a lot of them changed since then.
Okay. Well, obviously there's another disc to this packet. So I haven't watched the extras disc that comes with Sharda. This Sharda, I should say. I don't think I have, anyway. No, I haven't, because I broke the seal to watch it. It was still in its plastic sleeve. So there's a disc in there that I haven't seen yet. So I'm interested to see what's on, you know, what the extras are on this. I hope they haven't repeated them from the previous release. That would be a bit, you know, a bit cheapskatey on behalf of the BBC, which is rather topical at the moment, especially where they're charging 75 sort of upwards for the TV license now. Moving on. So Chris gets on the phone. Who's he on the phone to? Is it Claire? I can't remember now.
Claire.
It might be Claire, yeah. And then Skagra, like you say, he gets dropped off in the field, still wearing his clothes. And is he carrying...
Well, you don't want to wander around naked.
No, you said about him hijacking some clothes off people. But
It looks like... It does look very much like the guy who he hijacked. He's wearing his clothes.
Yeah, not at the moment, it isn't, because he's walked up into his invisible spaceship. Cost cutting there by the BBC at that particular time. Invisible spaceship, wearing his cape and stuff. You know. So at this stage, no. And then, yes.
I thank you, Deb. I had not really put that together. That's where he got the clothes.
Oh, yeah, I got that he got the clothes. But did he leave the bloke naked in the car? Because he... You know what I mean?
He's been going around willy-nilly killing everybody, so, you know.
Yeah, but so the car drove off, didn't it?
In his underpants, I don't know.
But did the car not drive away when he dropped off Skagra?
It looks like he's wearing exactly the same. I've got no idea if it definitely was, but it did look like he looked him up and down and went, yes, I think you can help me, and...
Yeah, I assumed he got the clothes from the guy in the car, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's a given he got the clothes from the guy in the car. But what I was saying was, to do that, didn't he, when he arrived back at his spaceship, the bloke or whoever was driving the car drive away?
No. You look at him arrive there, he's alone in the car, unless the body's lying in the back.
Oh, that's where I got confused. He's driving. Oh, I can see now, yeah, well done. I got confused. Okay, yeah, so he goes onto his spaceship, and the cartoon version of Skagra, slightly different voice. Why would that be, Kirby?
It's still the same actor.
Then why is he using a different voice?
Because he's more of an actor now.
But, yeah.
A few years have passed since then.
Yes.
So cartoon Skagra is watching a strange sort of cube rotating on a screen where we see some clips of the Doctor in action. In previous episodes,
I was disappointed. I had heard somewhere, I guess I was wrong, that they were going to put John Leeson's voice in instead of.
I heard that, but I only heard it from you. So I presume because you said so, Kirby, that actually was going to happen. But I think John Leeson may be in this story. Doesn't he not do the computer voice at some point?
Not that I'm aware of.
Ship, maybe? I don't know.
Ship is a female voice.
Yeah, it's a girl.
Yeah, interestingly, Shirley Dixon, who did the voice of the ship, she had been hired originally to do the voice of the ship, did like a few lines back when they were doing the first filming block, and then of course they didn't finish it, so they rehired her for this version.
Oh, good, that's all right then. I was just wondering, because I seem to remember when I was watching the cartoon of the voice of the ship being different during the cartoon scenes than it was during the live action scenes, that's all.
Probably because she's aged a little bit too.
Yeah, but Louise Jameson is able to change her voice back to the slightly higher pitch of Leela when she does her acting for Big Finish.
And Tom, when he does his little surprise appearance at the end of this, sounds exactly
the
same.
Do we have to talk about that now? Point deducted. That is ridiculous to talk about the big payoff at the end. That is right. 2 points deducted. Ridiculous. Anyway, moving on. So the Doctor and Romana are sort of still telling or trying to find how to get the book back with Chronotis, who's sorting. I don't know, he's acting really strange. Very good acting, though. I thought that the chap who played his sort of scatty professor acting was of a higher level, shall we say. So we finally meet Claire in the cartoon form while Chris is sat on a bench drinking a cup of something or other. And Claire's looking at the book and not that interested in it at this stage. And then we're back to the professor's room. The Doctor, meanwhile, decides to go out and tells Reminder to stay put and look after the
professor. He's gone to look for the book.
Gone to look for the book. The book. So he jumps on a bike.
The book. Give me the book.
Skagra turns back up with his new, well, his clothes that he borrowed off some bloke. Doesn't look quite as good in these clothes, to be fair. He meets Billy Bunter and says, "Have you seen Professor Kulutis?" Someone's phone's ringing. Oh, and that's Mary's phone.
Yeah, that's my phone. My daughter keeps messaging me, and I'm trying to tell her to stop.
So, Romana is toasting some crumpet by the by yes. the fire.
Isn't it?
If that was a real electric fire, that must have been blimmin' hot in that studio with the lights and real. That fire.
Yeah, it looks real.
Yeah, it does. She's toasting some crumpets, and the professor comes out of the kitchen wearing a red apron, and I think they've run out of milk, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah. So
he's run out of lumps of milk.
Yeah. So Romana goes into the TARDIS to get some, just as Skagra comes in, and I want the book. Oh, give me the book.
The book.
I won't need. I just sound like a chicken. And then the yes, nearly got out the end of that sentence. Yes, Kirby.
The spear, as it rises up out of the carpet bag, is on the end of that same automatic radio antenna.
Marvellous. It attaches itself to the professor's head. He waves his hands around a little bit and then falls on the ground going, "Ah!"
Professor falls to the ground.
Much of the amusement of Skagra.
Master?
Oh, God.
During the section where Skagra and the professor are bantering back and forth, the professor's glasses disappear and reappear.
A bit like Tom Baker's hat in the Pyramids of Mars. Anyway, right, so that's a great bit of animation, by the way, back with Claire in the lab, where she's got her glasses in her mouth by just chewing the sort of, you know, the arm that goes over her ear bit. I thought that was quite an interestingly. I wonder if that was actually in the script, that they thought, that, or whether they did this animation from the original script, maybe? I wouldn't have thought so, because the certain ways they're depicting things like the Doctor's arrival by doing a shadow on the wall from him opening the door while Claire's fiddling was very, very an animation thing only, but it was very well done.
Yeah, there are some things in the script that they did not do that Ian Levine's version did do.
Oh. So did Ian Levine try and do the script?
Not in this scene, but a lot of the prisoners had descriptions, not necessarily in the script, but in the makeup calls and stuff, because they had hired actors to play certain things.
Oh, okay. So
you end up with a Cyberman and a Dalek and stuff that were prisoners.
Anyway, so the Doctor arrives, and the clock has gone back to 1 p.m. There's always a clock behind somebody when they're in an animated lab. He introduces himself to Claire, has a look at the book. Just as Romana arrives out of the TARDIS carrying the bottle of very old-fashioned milk and finds the professor unconscious on the floor, K-9 comes out, and very disappointingly for everybody, still David Brierley's voice, just as Chris comes through the door. And that's a dog. That's a robot dog. Yes.
I was in college in 1979, and I could buy milk like that. It was cheaper because you returned the bottle.
God. I was referring to the shape of the bottle.
Yes, they were like that.
Yeah, maybe they were, but they weren't in like that. Oh, never mind. Shut up.
Right. Speaking of authenticity.
Yes.
In the first scene with Professor Chronotis, he is pulling the time machine out of a bag, shopping bag. That is a shopping bag from one of the most familiar bookstores in Cambridge. It is true to being in Cambridge.
What is it? A bit like Black's in Oxford?
I don't know.
Because that's very well known.
That's a very intellectual question there, Debbie. Well, so, anyway, Show Crotus off. Is lying on the ground, apparently dead, according to K9, fading fast. And, of course, so Romana sends Chris into the TARDIS. I think probably the better idea at this point would say to Chris, you stay here with the professor while I go and get something we urgently need from inside.
I know where I'm going.
Yes.
I'm not going to go, it's bigger on the inside.
But he found it.
He did, but that...
But probably after being stood there for about 20 minutes going, what?
I think he might have got a bit disorientated, whereas Romana could have just run straight to the air and get the thing they needed a lot quicker.
Down the corridor.
The very strange necklace, sort of a shiny, sparkly necklace. So they put it around the professor's...
he's nearly dead. He's not quite dead yet. Not yet.
So... meanwhile, the doctor is peering into a hole with Claire.
It's the X-ray machine.
Yeah. But the book is resisting all attempts to examine it. Skagra is on his spaceship, sitting back in his chair, talking to his little ball and watching some video footage of him going, buck, 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 buck. Give me the buck. and then, like I say, back in the Chronotis' lab, office, or whatever you want to call it, he's continuing to die and being monitored by K-9, who's just become a bit of a... in Star Trek, I don't even watch a TV series called Star Trek, they've got these benches that are able to assess the condition of patients. That's basically what K-9's doing here. He's not making... noises, but yes, God's sake,
take a look at you know when K-9 extends his probe thing to the professor's chest.
That's what she said.
Look at K-9's hindquarters. They've propped him up so that it will go down.
Brilliant, I've noticed that. But his head does go up and down a little bit, but obviously not down far enough.
Not far enough.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay.
So look at his hindquarters. They're
I just wonder, I bet Kirby hasn't noticed this, because he doesn't notice the silliest of things in these programs. He notices things that are quite bizarre to most of us. But I wonder if he noticed that Romana had her lunch on a hat. So there was really no need for her to go anywhere, because it was all on there, wasn't it?
Modus outfit in this.
I can see now he's tilted up.
I noticed that hat long before I ever saw Shada.
Did you?
Yes, because of the Five Doctors, of course.
Ah, wonderful. Right, so the Doctor is now being chased by Skagra, because he's got the book of the book in his basket. So he's carrying the ball, because he's just obviously been up the part having a kick around, so he's got the ball in his hand. And so the doctor said, no, I'm not giving you that, and rides off past a deliberately placed sort of barbershop choir. Is that what they call them, Debbie? You know Cambridge.
Just barbershop singers, that's all they are.
Master, don't you know the story behind them?
I don't want to know it, because we've said on previous episodes of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, listeners, we have another 412 episodes for you to peruse, where you'll find Kirby talking about the same subject over and over again. I'm sure you don't want to hear it this time. Right, moving on. So
I've been to the Chattanooga Choo-Choo.
What?
Oh.
Sound like Sheldon, then. Right, then.
Thank you.
So the Doctor rides past the choir, as does the ball, which was on a little aerial thing as it rode past them.
Chasing him around, that's brilliant.
And it's amazingly aerial thing that it's travelling, following him on, which you can't see it at all.
Talking about?
Well, you said the ball is
on. The ball's entirely CGI.
Is it? Did you get that, Debbie? Did you say that was a CGI ball?
Some of it was, but most of it wasn't.
Well, as it's chasing the Doctor.
No, it was. They put it in for the 1979 VHS release as CGI, and then they redid the CGI for this one.
I know! Right then, moving on. So as he rides around the bend, a book falls out of his blooming basket. And
Master.
So and God, yes.
They had a mousetrap set up, and Tom had a switch. So as he went around that the turn there, he flipped the switch, and the mousetrap went off and knocked the book out.
Cool, right. Where did I get up to? Yes, book falls out. Yes, I was just about to move on to the next bit. Oh, yes. So Skagra picks up the book and with a wry smile. But the ball continues to follow the doctor a little while. And the doctor parks the bike by a sign that says no cycling and runs deliberately down a blank lane or dead end lane, I should say, into a fence, climbs up the fence, tries to get under the fence. The ball closes in on him and then it decides to go away. I think Skagra doesn't need the doctor's mind at this point because he's got the... I do hope that doesn't wake dinner. The TARDIS arrives and remarks... Oh, no, it doesn't. That's because the TARDIS arrives and the scarf gets trapped in the door. That's why the ball doesn't attack the Doctor at this point.
As I recall, one of the cliffhangers was the ball approaching him.
Yes, and that was the cliffhanger to episode 2. I can't believe we actually got to episode 2. In this length of time, the same length of time it would take actually to watch the first 2 episodes. Right. Right. Okay. So the Doctor arrives back with Chronotis and... Oh, has he disappeared now? Is he dead? No, oh, yeah, he dies, doesn't he? And his yes. body disappears. And the Doctor then says, must have been right at the end of his regeneration cycle. So why does his body disappear but not the necklace? Why does the necklace go with him? Any ideas?
Master,
oh,
because
for
it's science, science fiction fantasy TV
oh,
show.
Oh, God. I don't like the light on the top of the TARDIS, which the actual roof of the TARDIS looks really awkward in this episode. It's all lopsided and wonky.
Why don't you like the light?
It's blue. It's like a police car light. It doesn't look like a TARDIS light.
But that's the way it was when I first started watching. Therefore, that's the way it should be to me.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I do apologize.
That's the way it is.
Cardinal
in
crime on this show,
the
burp.
Opening in the diamond version of the Doctor Who credits at the beginning. It's the little police, the little bubble police thing.
Okay, I prefer it where it's got that little shell around it with the blue light in the middle of it, a bit like the current one. Well, the Tennant one.
Oh, I agree with you, but. It's just that this was the way it was supposed to be for me when I first started watching. Therefore, it's got this little fondness.
I think this is the point, anyway. They're back at... Obviously, Chronotis is now dead. His body's gone, and they haven't got the book anymore. The first time the Doctor's looked a bit serious in this story, I think he's got to try and catch Skagra and get the book back. So... The ball, meanwhile, floats across a river, which might be the Cam, I don't know, and one of the old UNIT stuntmen, very famous face you'll notice from UNIT from years gone by, is just fishing, and then it's like a slow motion header of the ball. It comes in, it all in is on me head, son. He headers it and he falls into the lake because he's a stuntman, you see. He can do that.
Has to do something.
Sadly for him, it's very shallow water, so he just face plants into the lake. So what about, no wonder he's got a sort of flat nose if he has to keep doing stunts like that. Claire arrives at Chronosis's office of Sisyphus, but there's no one there. Well, there is. The TARDIS dematerializes at that point, I think. Oh, yeah. Arrives in the field where Skagra's spaceship is, and the ball disappears into the spaceship. And Chris and Romana follow with K-9 sort of sneaked in somehow out of the TARDIS. And they sort of walk into this invisible spaceship. So they have to do this sort of invisible spaceship acting, which had sort of been done, if I remember rightly, in Pyramids of Mars. I may be wrong.
But I think it's very cleverly done.
Oh, yes. And, of course, it was done again in another story called... Oh, what's that one with the Doctor Becomes Human? What was that? Human Nature, is it? Human Nature, Family of Blood? Is that right?
Human family of blood. Yeah. That
anyway, moving back to this episode. Skagra then does some research on the TARDIS and the Time Lords and stuff like that, and realises that the book is a Time Lord relic and needs the Doctor now to decipher its meaning. So they get into the spaceship to cut a long, long story short. I love the red carpet scenario. and I love the old-fashioned graphics they use for getting into the spaceship as well. So Claire is in the professor's office, and I think she finds Chris's bag, and is basically an empty room. So she starts poking around and finds some books and stuff like that. And eventually, I think I've come to the next thing, because the Doctor's now in the spaceship, and Skagra turns up and does some sort of animated sinister looks. and the funny thing I like about this bit is because the Doctor is looking sort of at Skagra side view, looking straight at us while Skagra walks up in the background, which obviously if it had been done with live action, he wouldn't have been looking at the screen while Skagra turned, he'd be looking at Skagra. So there's a notice. I still like it though, just it's funny. And it does, of course, still enable us to continue to stay with the story, if you like. excuse me. So then we have Skagra telling the Doctor, these voices are and everything, and then this is a point in which he tries to get the Doctor to tell him what the book is, and is it a ancient High Gallifreyan or something like that? The sort of text that
no, it's a code.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's not nothing. And remember, the Doctor tries to pronounce it in with bunches of weird. It's a code.
Like that.
So Chris, Romana, and K9 are locked up in a cell, and there's some sort of very Douglas Adams esque dialogue between the three of them.
I wonder why.
And then of course there's these bits where he goes, oh, blast, and K9's gun comes out, and we have to have funny little jokes. Chris ducks a little bit too slowly at some point. Everybody else is down. Romana's down, and the little zigzaggy lines of laser fire shoot off the walls. So, yeah, very bad jokes. So Claire now comes out of Chronotis' office with a bag full of stuff, has a word with Billy Bunter, a very superfluous character, and
I like him.
I like him, but he's very superfluous. And then Chris is having a moan. I think then Romana says something, doesn't she? And just and then is released, leaving Chris and K9. Because that makes Chris think that whatever Romana said last is what he needs to say to get himself released. But what has actually happened
She says, I wish to get out of here. And it just happens to be when...
Yeah, when Skagra pulled, yeah. What's happened is that Skagra's basically kidnapped her and demanded that she fly the TARDIS somewhere. The Doctor, meanwhile, is unconscious on the ship, and this is a point when he tells the ship that he's not an enemy of Skagra, and convinces the ship that he's dead.
One correction I'd make is he didn't force Romana to fly the ship. Because he has the Doctor's mind in his mind. He knew
him. Yeah, because we forgot to mention that. He's on the floor unconscious because he's had the ball on his head.
How come he survives it when everybody else has turned to mush?
Because he's a Time Lord.
No, he says later that he can allow the sphere to only see certain parts of his mind.
We'll go with that one then, Kirby, shall we? Yeah, so he tries to convince the ship that...
Do I get a point?
No. He's dead. But sadly, because he's convinced the ship that he's dead, the oxygen's turned off, and, of course, he now collapses and he's going to die. And then Claire...
No, it doesn't quite make sense. Oxygen. Checkmate.
Oh, no, I like that.
Doctor's the only carbon-based life form in there that's breathing... There's still plenty of oxygen in there for like an hours.
Yes, probably, but it wouldn't make much fun for the story, would it? And, of course, he can do what he did with Sarah Jane, couldn't he? He can just psychically hold his breath, or whatever they call it.
He's got that alternative respiratory
bypass system.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like in Zygons.
That's what I was implying. Yes, right then, anyway. So Claire's back in Cronotis's office and opens up a cupboard, which has some very cool retro computer sockets in it and some cricket stuff and tennis racket and stuff like that. And press something and a panel opens. Oh, yeah, it's a pile of books. And a panel opens down, very sort of retro 1970s futuristic panel. She starts just randomly pressing some buttons and the room dematerializes.
Yeah, it's very, very easy, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, this is an old-fashioned TARDIS, isn't it? So it didn't have those sort of controls on it that would hold anybody back from dematerializing. So Chris and K-9 find the Doctor dying, but he's all right now because they're there. The ship has to put some air into the thing. And Skagra and Romana arrive at... Is it Sharda? Is that right?
No.
No? Where they arrive now?
This is the kind of Skagra's mothership.
Oh, Skagra's mothership.
The big ship. There's three other little ones, when the other one materializes.
I see. So then he has a long conversation with Romana, and then we meet these Krag things, which are really weird.
They're very peculiar.
They look like somebody who's walked through a building yard covered in superglue and just bumped in a load of slates on the way. And they're just, yes, what?
Krags is scrambling of the letters for Skagra.
Marvellous. Thank you for that, Kirby.
You don't get a point.
Right. So,
there's no S in Krag, and there's no...
there's Krags. No R
in Skagra.
Well, yeah, if you got multiple Krags...
Krags.
No, what I read was that the original name for that monster was Krag... which was a scrambling of the letters, but then they decided on Krags because they didn't like that. So it's not just a scrambling of the letters.
Kirby.
So there.
Kirby. Point for Mary. I do like that one. That was good. Right.
Thank you. Oh, Kirby.
Anyway, I love the little computer animated graphic they did to work with these materializing Krags and these little bed things. Really quite cool. Then the spaceship takes off, looking really retro, really quite cool again. Now it's moving on. Oh, yeah, right. This is Cronotis's TARDIS, dematerialized, it knocked Claire out. And when she woke up, the professor's there wearing a Smurf hat. It does look a little bit like Papa Smurf. I mean, if he had a red outfit on and he painted himself blue, he would look like Papa Smurf. He brings out some tea and some lumps of milk for them to have, and then sort of explains to a completely bemused Claire what's happened. Meanwhile, Skagra is looking through the little sort of hieroglyph in the book on a screen and nagging poor Romana. The mothership arrives. Sorry, the little ship that's... I'll start again. Skagra's ship arrives in a larger ship, docks in there, and the Doctor and Chris are sort of poking around. They find a sign that says IASS, and Toe Kirby, what does that stand for?
I don't remember. IAS. And this is the think tank where the whole story started.
Yes, it is, but that had some initials, which would have been in a quiz if I'd written some questions about it.
Do you have a quiz for this one?
No. And then, of course, we meet all these old chaps with their very long hair and their beards. And
their long heels, too.
And one chap sort of talks a bit like that.
They reminded me of all the old scientists in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
It reminded me of a selection of actors that failed to get the part of the It's Man on Monty Python.
Yeah, good one.
Institute for Advanced Science Studies.
Not the Institute for the... actors who couldn't get into Monty Python.
and the ASD that Chris Parsons is questioning the advanced state of decay, he says, is actually the initials of the one scientist that they managed to revive.
Okay. I do love the way they created the TARDIS console room in animated form. That's really quite, it's quite atmospheric.
Yeah, they did a good job.
Right, so...
And they left off something that Ian Levine put in because it's in the script.
Yeah.
That they, you know, in, I believe it's the next story we're going to be watching, where K-9...
You mean the Leisure Hive?
Himself, and they're sitting on the beach, and there's those beach chairs.
Yeah, the Leisure Hive.
Yeah. They had, in the script... They bring in some of those chairs into the console room.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad they didn't really need to do that, did they? Anyway, so the Doctor is sort of in the think tank room. It needs a bit of a dust, doesn't it, Mary? It's a bit, you know, when we first saw it, it was lovely, pristine, and very 1970s high sci-fi, wasn't it? And now these are really good, clean. K-9 starts shooting some Krags, and... doesn't really have much of an effect on the Doctor carries a few of the one of the particular its men into a little seat and just sort of straighten his beard and his hair out of it. I did wonder at this point where they've actually got into a situation where they really do need a shave and a haircut. What were they eating?
2 bits.
Oh, you beat me to it.
What did you say?
Shave and a haircut. 2 bits.
2 bits.
Didn't really answer my question though, did it?
You don't know that? Okay.
Anyway, right then. So,
I guess he's never seen Roger Rabbit.
I have seen Roger Rabbit. Thank you very much.
Well, we don't know how long they were in there. It was more than about a week that they were in that.
It was the sexiest that Kathleen Turner's ever been. Roger Rabbit, have to be saying.
She wasn't given credit for doing the voice. She's not in the credits.
But she did do it.
I know she did it, but she, yeah, I know she did, but yeah.
Anyway, moving on. So the Doctor fiddles with some controls, and K-9 shoots some Krags ineffectually. Chris loses consciousness, and doesn't his sort of mind get attached slightly to the think tank while he's unconscious? The Doctor's having... the conversation with this bloke, and for some reason, while he's got old, he's talking a bit like this because he's old. He's going to talk like that. I've met a few old people in my time, and their voices don't suddenly go like that when they're old. So why can't he talk in his normal voice? Why does he have to put a pathetically stupid, pretending to be old voice on? Don't we all normally sound, our voices might drop, or you know, like, but we essentially still talk like ourselves. I mean, look at Tom Baker. It's probably dropped a slight bit, isn't it, his voice? But he's able to act it back to the Doctor, isn't he? No? Okay, I'll shut up then. Right then, moving on.
I know what you mean, but yeah, no, I just don't see why we should be doddery.
Yeah. Hey, so Chris is, meanwhile, he's having a bit of a nightmare because he's tossing and turning in his little seat. And K-9 still shooting the Krag. I like the red effect that they were. I suppose they shone sort of red light on us like that to make it look like it. Hang on, let me finish the sentence. To make it look like it was like glowing red heat. Yes, go on, Kirby.
CSO. They painted it green in the upper parts, and then CSO'd that in.
But it's still quite good. And And the hands, the fingernails of the. The scientists was also rather...
Oh, truly gross.
Now, they must have eaten something in that time. How would they have handled their food? You would have thought at some point...
I have an answer.
Yeah, go on, Em.
Well, they did the rehearsal that day, and then they went off and had their lunch, which is actually dinner because the time of day they record these things. And then when they came back, then, even though they were in full makeup, everything except for the fingernails... And then they got their fingernails put on after dinner.
I wasn't actually referring to the actors. I was actually referring to the characters.
It wasn't that many days that they were in there. This story only takes, you know, place over just a day or two.
Well, the fact that they've gone from being normal young to really, really old in that time, I suppose.
But the process of being drained is what turned them so old.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. I didn't realize.
Yeah, so they didn't have to eat anything.
Okay.
But if the process of being drained, how did that made them all old? How did it make the lab also old and all pidgey? And
I didn't get that it was a couple of days. I got it where they've been there for several years, hence that they
were old. I did too. That's what I thought.
But that's what the point I was trying to make.
Take place over several years, though.
No, but they're the spaceship. You don't know when Skagra. Oh, I see what you mean, really, because Skagra's still young and they're all. Oh, I never really considered that. what do you think, Debbie?
I'm not too sure on this one because I was just sat there the first time I watched it going, Gagra's been gone a very long time. And then it was like, well, has he just drained them? I've no idea. No idea on this one.
I just assume they drained them because we don't have even like a night and a next day. We have, it looks like everything happening in the same day.
But Kirby's point of how the room aged as well is quite interesting, isn't it? We'll never know.
I have an answer.
You do? Science fiction.
Science fiction fantasy.
TV. That's a brilliant answer, that one.
My answer, though, so point deducted.
Am I three down now?
Nicking my quotes. Right then. So we see an external shot of the spaceship with a... Oh, and it blows to smithereens.
Yeah, what blew the ship up? I never figured that out.
I believe that it was... Because K-9 was shooting all those things that they kind of blew up for some reason. I don't think it's made clear.
Because the next scene is the Doctor shutting his eyes and he's looking out through each eye in a bit of surprise that he's still there, I suppose.
Because last we knew, Skagra and Ramona were still on that big ship.
Ramona. Love it. Where do we get her?
Ramona.
Yes, she means Ramona. Stop picking on her. Right, point deduction for picking on Mary.
It's just all of a sudden that ship just blows up, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, where did that come from? And we still have people on that ship.
4 points down, Kirby. You're doing well this week. Right, so she has another conversation. Oh, for God's sake, yes?
The names of all of the scientists are based on a place in Greece where Douglas Adams had vacationed shortly before he wrote this.
Okay.
And there was a old volcano there. That's why the main one is Caldera, which is a volcanic. It's a blown up volcano.
Riveting. Right then. So back in the professor's TARDIS office, or what you want to call it. Claire has taken her hair down. She's got a barnet now. She's taken her hair down. It's a fluffy sort of hair thing going on. And she's fiddling with some kit. Is it after the professor has sort of mind melded with her and given her some...
Apparently, yeah.
And allowed her to... I think that bit's coming up now. Because that's where you see the glowy eyes. Ah, here we go. He sort of yellow glowy eyes. And he sort of... imparts some skills, shall we say, to Claire to allow her to help him get some operation on of the TARDIS. Lots more Krags get created or get materialized, or what you want to call it. Because of course I forgot to mention through the whole of this, Skagra is absolutely desperate because he wants what's that chap called again? Saliavin. He needs to find Saliavin, he wants all this information. He thinks it's going to lead him to Saliavin, who is in prison on Sharda. I should have mentioned that, really, shouldn't I? Because it's the whole crux of the story. And I can't remember, because obviously there's several conversations, why he needs Saliavin. Is it just if he thinks Saliavin, being such an evil person, will be able to sort of turn him into a sort of like an apprentice in some way? Yes?
No, it has to do with Saliavin's mental power to take over, to project himself into people.
Does he think that Sally Amon's going to give him this this power, or that
he's
not voluntarily? He's going to take control of him and then have him transfer that power somehow. Okay. Hasn't he considered the possibility?
He's
going to use the spear to get the ability.
Yeah, but don't you think that Sally Amon could just sort of get into his mind and turn the sphere on him?
Gash is not the smartest guy in the room.
Clearly not.
Well, he's pretty smart to have done things as far as he's taken them.
Yeah, technically clever, but not sort of common sense clever, is he?
People who want to take over the world, you know, they always have a weak spot somewhere.
The Doctor and Chris are trying to run away from Skagra, and they're running through some corridors. Romana has been grabbed by a Krag, and while they're running away, they find this mysterious door and run in through it, and they arrive in the Professor's essentially his TARDIS. I do like the fact that it's just the door is the TARDIS. It's not like a box or that. Yeah. It's just the door. Really quite cool. I think if they thought about it initially when they invented Doctor Who, that it was just the door. They could have completely done away with the TARDIS. They could just have this door that appears in places. And
The odd thing is that they did do some filming of special effects and stuff before the strike interfered. And one of the things they did film was
a room.
The segment where the Doctor is trying to go between the Professor Chronotis' TARDIS and his TARDIS.
It was a room.
And they, in this version, they show it as the door.
Yes.
But the actual film section was
a room. I've said it four times now. Right, point deducted.
Oh, dear.
You were just saying the room. I didn't know you were referring to that.
Yes, it was. I've seen it. It was. I'm not going to deduct a point there. Listeners wouldn't have heard the dee-dee noise. No, yes, I was, because I've seen that. Basically, they had the I'll explain to people the opening title time vortex footage, and they had the TARDIS on one side, the professor's room on the left side or right side, and the Doctor was walking was walking from one to the other.
I just watched that version too yesterday.
Oh, good Lord. You really have got too much time in your hands.
I love the story.
Yes. Right, hang on. Things just trying to catch up with it. So, yes, the Doctor's a bit surprised to see the Professor. And the explanation as to why he exists still is a bit weird, but hey-o, it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. And Romana is still in the possession, or being possessed, as in owned slightly by Skagra, as they arrive on Sharda. And when they arrive, he sort of walks into the place where the TARDIS has landed. He sort of flaps his arms around and goes, Sharda. And I think they go around and release a couple of criminals just for the sake of it. Why would you do that? And the others sort of lounge around the professor's, hang on, it's only Chris, isn't it? Just Chris and Claire are left inside the professor's TARDIS, because the professor, the Doctor, and have gone into, they've arrived on Sharda as well, basically. And so Skagra, like I say, he sort of finds Sally Avin's cell, and then the penny sort of drops, because, of course, surprise, surprise. Sally Amon is in fact the Professor,
dun, 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 dun.
Who does his glowy eye thing, and
so if he's so evil, I expected things to turn around and
we did too.
him to be, you know, the evil take over everything monster.
Yes. Well, that's a bit
thing
like.
Is this...
Yeah, go on.
Go ahead.
It reminded me a little bit of Good Omens, at the end of Good Omens, when Adam, being the, you know, the son of the devil, he expected him to, you know, he went all nicer a bit, that right at the end he was actually going to go evil, but no, he made the decision to be nice, and he remained nice, a sort of bit like that.
Yeah, a bit like that.
there are expectations. My expectations were that now we're really in the hands of the evil one.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that it would have turned the story too dark, I think, if that had happened. Yeah,
there are hints in the script, and in the, actually what we see and hear, where Selyavin was actually not that evil. He was the other Time Lords kind of didn't like the fact that they couldn't do what he did, so they imprisoned him.
Yeah, that's what I got from it as well.
So he's not really a bad guy.
No. But like, he does get a ball planted on his head. K-9 shoots one of them, I think, and it then becomes loads of little balls. And then they attach themselves to all the other villains that just happen to be standing in a line. And then they all start walking around like zombies. The remaining people, apart from the professor, get back into the professor's TARDIS. And this is the point you were talking about, Kirby, where the Doctor has to try and go through the time vortex to get to his TARDIS. And the Doctor and Mana do like a salute thing, which is quite... she gets a medal. She comes up with a particularly good idea. A bit like Muttley from in Darth Vader and Muttley. But he doesn't rip the medal back off her chest at the end of it.
And you just give us points instead of medals.
Well, sometimes you get points. Not very often, but yeah. So the idea is that I think Romana and Claire have to hold a couple of buttons down to maintain this this sort of vortex thingy that he's got to travel down. And trouble is they've left something on the table. They've made this new graphic of the Doctor. It's very clever, actually. They've sort of told the old graphic of the Doctor walking across this sort of strange effect. To reach the thing on the table, one of them lets go of the button. It's Romana, isn't it? Claire lets go of the button. The big explosion happens, and you think that's the end of the Doctor because he floats off into space. Time and space.
The thing is that we just saw a quarter very similar to this in the previous story in Nymon.
Indeed we did. And then we see a similar corridor in future Doctor Who, as in New Who, as we call it, which is now vastly becoming fairly old Who.
I know.
It's just like,
isn't that interesting?
14 years since the first one. So the Doctor actually is not floating. He's now found himself lying on the floor of a spaceship with some cyber heads on a shelf behind him and all sorts of other bits of Doctor Who memorabilia. He's actually landed in the old Doctor Who experience in Cardiff.
This is the storeroom in the TARDIS.
Oh, is it? Okay. And he walks into the console room and... blows his whistle and K-9 does some stuff and then he puts that weird thing. He's worn that sort of hat thing before, hasn't he? You know, that with the lights.
No, he just constructed this one.
Oh, did he? Oh, sorry. But the Doctor has constructed similar things in the past, and basically has a little mind battle with Morbius. I mean, with Skagra. And, trying to control the zombies that are wandering around, and then lots of battles. Oh, Krags turn up, and what happens to Skagra then? He goes running off. Some Krags start blowing up. I think the Doctor did that with his mind, didn't he?
No. The Krags are blowing up because Romana and Claire are using those electrical cables Do I get a point?
No, just a couple of weeks since I watched this episode. Skagra disappears in a cubey thing. Is he then imprisoned in the ship's brig, or is he actually in a cell on Sharda now?
No, it's the ship's brig, I believe.
Yeah, because
he's in an airlock. He's in an airlock.
I thought it was that little brig.
No, it's the same brig that he put
Romana and Chris and K-9 in. Yes,
Chris and yeah. Uh-huh.
So
and it's interesting that that's pretty much the only live action, other than in the professor's study, that is in this final section.
Anyway,
so they filled it back when they had, in the when they had that same room for Chris and Romana.
I just had a message from Matthew. Sorry, yeah. Ended up dozing back off and taking a nap without meaning to. But somebody answer him and say, well, you can come on now if you like. We're still near the end of it. Yeah, go on, Kirby, you can do that. So the doctor walks in Romana is sort of on her knees next to an unconscious, possibly dead villain. And the doctor skillfully kicks the ball away. I told you you'd been playing football at the park, didn't I? Oh, no, that was Skagra. And, yeah. And he's got two halves of one of these balls.
Yeah.
Trying to weigh up some.
Got to be in two halves, but yeah, he does.
Now Skagra is moaning because he's now imprisoned within his own ship's brig, and does some sort of got a slight migraine going on.
Having trouble unlocking my phone, so
give
me a sec.
It's obviously not an iPhone, is it? So
you can do it online.
Yeah, say that.
Billy Bunter has brought in a police officer to investigate the disappearance, which we forgot to mention earlier, of the provisions room. And of course, when they go in there, they're all inside enjoying themselves. But he does notice that there's a police box in the corner, and he's not particularly impressed by this. And when the doctor and Romana and K-9 go into the police box and it dematerializes, he sort of wants a bit of an explanation. I think the professor offers him a cup of tea. And after that, what Kirby spoiled, because he does like the spoil stuff, is a magical scene, a live-action scene shot in the TARDIS, where you see that the Doctor's legs out from under the console. He's obviously talking to Romana, who is elsewhere in the TARDIS. And you're thinking, oh, wait, that's all right, it's just some bloke who's got the scarf and his thing. And then he stands up, and it's the Doctor, as in Tom Baker, as he is now, with his grey hair.
Oh, that made me cheer.
You know what I got? What would have been quite good is if when he got up, he was actually wearing the Series 18 costume, and they put a beard and long hair on him, because that's what he looks like when they aged him in Leisure Hive. And that would have fitted really, really well. There was a sort of timey-wimey thing going on. With Leisure Hive.
I haven't seen Leisure Hive, so I don't know.
What happens? It starts off in Brighton, Kirby. I know you like your spoilers. It starts off in Brighton on the beach, and K-9 goes off fetch. He goes off into the sea in Brighton and blows up, basically, so they can't
use him. I've seen that scene.
As they can't use him.
I have no idea anything about aging that you're talking about. And I also understand that he switches to the burgundy scarf. I don't know why.
Because that's what John Nathan Turner wanted to do.
Yeah, showrunner, knew everybody, knew look for the Doctor,
So that's what they should have done.
Master, the whole speech that he gives there.
Yes.
He actually gave the same thing, the same little speech in the museum in the 1979 VHS version.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. But it was really good. It was almost brought a lump to my throat seeing that particular scene.
Oh, and he even did the smile at the end of the 1970 version.
Fantastic. Really, really good. But like I say, I think it would have been quite a nice little homage for him to be wearing that particular, costume. Because we'll see it when Leisure High comes along and he becomes old Doctor in Leisure Hive. They could have actually worked it. Obviously didn't think of it like I do, but worked it quite nicely anyway. Okay, so that's Shada. That was beautiful, wasn't it? That end scene.
Yes.
Made the whole thing for me.
That was just the highlight.
Well, it's definitely the highlight, but of a quite enjoyable story, to be fair. It's certainly better than The Horns of Nymon. It's very nice to actually see it as it really should have been, because having watched it previously, obviously they tried to fill in the gaps, one originally with Tom Baker just talking through the missing things, and then
which is very strange.
Yeah, then they had the audio version of Paul McGann played the Doctor in, which was, for me, I found it a bit boring, and then there was another version with the redone CGI bits and the same bits with talked through bits, and now they've done this with the computer sort of cartoon stuff going in. Now, this is for me been the easiest to follow the story with, and for that I've actually enjoyed it more this time than I've ever done before. I just wish they'd done it episodically. It would have been easier to watch in small episodes, but I did remember that where the cliffhangers were, so
it was kind of obvious in two of them, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, on the whole, it was almost like watching a classic story that I've never seen before in a complete form, a bit like it was when we were watching the, you know, the reconstructed episodes when we were doing the first and second Doctor's stories. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, quite enjoyed it. And by the way, everybody, it's the last six-part story that we'll see, apart from Two Doctors, which is a three-part story, but essentially it's a six-parter. So, what did you think of it then, Kirby?
I absolutely love this story. I always have ever since seeing the 1979 VHS version and hearing the Big Finish, etc., etc. I love it in all of its versions. This is the best version. The Ian Levine one is the most complete because it's got the episode breaks. So if you want to see it with episode breaks, watch that. But the animation is horrible.
Oh. Okay.
And the voices are strange because they got a Tom Baker impersonator. Although they did get Lala Ward, and they got then that's the one that's got John Leeson.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. That's right. Yes, it has.
So, but I just... This is Douglas Adams. What can I say?
He's not perfect, Kirby, Douglas Adams. He may think he was, or may have thought he was, but he isn't, I'm afraid.
But one thing I like about it is, other than things that they put... that the people put in as jokes, Douglas Adams jokes, like in the animation... Mm-hmm. He's not quoting himself in this version, whereas in City of Death and Pirate Planet, he quotes himself in Hitchhiker's Guide stuff.
Oh, okay.
But he did take bits from this and turn them into Dirk Gently.
Yes, I know that. Yes, I know. Did everybody else know that? Didn't anybody else know that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I knew that.
Okay. Carry on.
Well, that's it. I love this.
Good.
And this is the best one of them all.
Okay. That's good. That's a good story. And it's got the fairly good
get
balance.
A point?
No. I'm really ashamed of myself for doing that big loud belch on the show earlier on, which is totally uncontrollable.
I have a question.
Yeah?
I have a question. Does this animated live action version have no breaks in it?
No.
No, not at all.
Because I know the version I watched didn't, but I thought it was just the version I watched. So.
No, it did get to the point where you were like, I kind of need to pause it here somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's a bit. I probably know that people do have pause buttons on their DVD players these days. That's probably why they've done it. But I like the idea of having the six episodes. Like, but they've done it in the past when they've released it. They've done it in episodic form, and I quite like that. But we did have one of the episodes in like 10 minutes long between them. The opening titles and the closing titles when it got to the latter part of the story. So this is certainly the longest visual version of Shada there's been, because the Tom Baker filling in the gaps versions were very, very short, really, comparatively.
Pedantically, no, the longest version is
Christ's Ian Levine. No, I don't want to take out that one.
They did have the episode breaks.
Okay, good. Well, right then. Debbie, have you seen this before?
Nope.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was actually pretty good. I really did. We've talked about it all the way through anyway, so I haven't really got much more to add to it. But yeah, after the last one, The Horns of Nymon, this was like a return to just being good classic Who. But yeah, it was a bit... with the animation, it was seamless, but I did feel that you needed the cliffhangers, you needed the episode breaks for it to be a true Who story, because this just felt like it was a film that went on a bit too long. So I knew if I'd actually just broken it down and watched it in episodes, it would have played a bit better, because there was always a bit halfway through where I just get a bit like, okay, I need the toilet, I need a drink, you know, that sort of thing. I'm going to press pause, go off for a wander, then come back. Whereas before, it's like I watch maybe one or two episodes, then break for a couple of days. This was actually making me watch it all in one sitting, which obviously it wasn't meant to be. I really did find it enjoyable. I found the whole question at the end about, well, obviously in the past he was maligned for being a bad guy, but he's not actually a bad guy. And the Doctor being very accepting of that, I thought that was quite forward thinking and quite of the era, quite a forward thinking again. And I'm just going to use that expression again, but I really liked it. It was a good Doctor Who story, good story, good acting. Brilliant monsters, as you say. Having walked through a building site with glue on them, that was a brilliant description of them. And I love the way that K-9 heated them up and they just blow up. And it was a good classic monster. Good story. I don't really know what more I can add to that, really.
Hooray! before we move on to the next person, I'd just like to pre-warn you that when Ian Kirk's feedback comes up, you lot are going to have to just be very, very quiet for 1 minute and 15 seconds, because you won't be able to hear it, but the listeners will be able to hear it, and we need the show to run as it normally does. Mwah, ha, ha. But yes, I'll be introducing it as normal. I'll be listening to it. And then I'll bring you back in after. So if you can actually be professional podcasters for a change, that's a laugh, isn't it? Right then. So the next person is, of course, Mary.
Okay. You're not playing the music. Okay.
Oh, yes, I was.
Oh, okay. Well, I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought that I got a special version in that there were no breaks, but I find out, I guess that's the way it is. But it helped me stay involved, which I really enjoyed, rather than having those breaks.
Mary, had you seen it before, though? Had you seen other versions of it before?
Well, yeah, I've sort of seen other versions, and I've listened to the Big Finish one, and I really haven't been able to get into it. But this one totally captivated me. I was really interested through all of it. It got a little slow and dragged out at the end, with the mind war and the living dead. Going back and forth. I mean, that dragged on a little bit. But other than that, I thought the whole thing moved along very well. And I enjoy the fact that the animators did a good job of blending in, the scenes so that it didn't feel like a jarring break from live action to animation. It always seemed like it was a natural transition. So I liked that. The only thing that kind of let me down a little, because I didn't remember how it ended, when it was revealed that Salyavin,
yes,
was actually Professor Chronotis. And that for me was kind of an exciting turn. I thought, ooh, this is the surprise. And how are we going to deal with this? And I got very excited about that. But then when it turned out, oh, no, he's just a nice guy now. That was a little bit of a letdown. You said the story would have gotten too dark. I don't know. I like unusual twists like that, where everybody's getting comfortable and we all think, oh, yeah, it's going to get better now. And then dun, 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 this big surprise that now they have something else
to deal
with.
Well, I quite like the other where they actually did it. Imagine watching this just the once, if it had been in its complete format, that, you really didn't know that Professor Chronotis was Salyavin. And you wonder what was going to happen when they did meet him, and he turned out it was actually all lovely Professor Chronotis all along.
Yeah.
Not as bad as everybody thought it was going to be. I quite like that.
Well, it was a nice, it was a nice ending. It just that it took that excitement away from a surprise twist that could have taken us in another direction. So, but other than that, I really, really enjoyed this version. And this is the one that I hope survives beyond the other ones.
Yeah, I don't think they need to do another version, do they?
No.
Unless they do just redo it for a new Who, just do it. Perhaps.
Yeah.
It'd be very long, though, wouldn't it? I don't think they could. Okay, now this is the point which you lot are going to have to shut up for 1 minute and 15 seconds.
Shut up! by Douglas Adams. This is a recorded message. Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
I watched the 1992 version narrated by Tom Baker. It was a nice enough story. The eccentric professor had most of the best lines. The TARDIS can do pinpoint materializations in this story. Running down corridors is replaced by cycling down streets. Why did the professor summon the doctor in the first place? The narrator says it was because he was nearing the end of his last regeneration, but I don't see how that explains it. Plot device, I expect. The arrogant Skagra, looking for the ancient book so he can find Sollievin, kills the professor. Who is Sollievin? It is ironic that the master criminal, Sollievin, who escaped even the Time Lords, is taken for questioning by a Cambridge policeman for the disappearance of a police box. Did you know it's the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11? Yes, I thought you did. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Yes, indeed, it is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. Now, my daughter Isabella is convinced that the moon landings never happened. And I haven't actually had a conversation with her about it, that why would they just kill some poor innocent astronauts in the, you know, with a means trying to get to the moon just for the sake of trying to pretend they got to the moon. So she's almost like a flat earther. So we'll have to try and correct her with that one.
Oh my.
But yeah.
They did.
Can't hear you. She's on a sleepover. Anyway, I've got cramps.
Yes, I know. I know, because I was at the house she was at this morning.
You stalking my daughter?
No, I found out that she was going there afterwards.
Right, I have a punishment for you for stalking my daughter.
Excuse me, Maddie is my goddaughter.
Doesn't matter. I'm still punishing you by sending you some stuff to read out
from
a certain ATB. Well, I try and correct the cramp I've got on my shoulder.
Rib long, and I haven't had a chance to have a look. Let's have a look. Sollievin and the lumps of milk, or Skagra.
Whoa! Did you just say it's very long and you haven't had a chance to look? That's what she said.
Alan did send the message that it is very long.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Sollievin and the Lumps of Milk, or Skagra's Walking Tour of Cambridge, now under the management of Tim Drury. Dear 20 Megabytes, Sharda is, of course, a closely studied extrapolation of footage cleverly shot about 3 years in advance of the story The Five Doctors. Since only a limited amount of this footage was in fact used for The Five Doctors, it has subsequently left open the construction of an additional story which can be placed at the conclusion of season 17. The story themes are obviously rooted in identity. There is loss of identity by those accosted by Skagra's balls.
Your pardon?
He wrote that, not me. The assumed identity of Professor Chronotis hides him as being the criminal, Sollievin, whose actual criminal identity is in the vaguest possible way challenged as either inaccurate or has been subject to genuine reform, thereby asserting the validity of individual identity change and development. The Doctor exploits his identity as a designated dead person to get help from Skagra's computer. Skagra's whole plan is to reduce all identities into one universal identity, which would, of course, be an absolute negation of any meaningful individual identity. It should be noted that while some claim the story is a little lackluster for its illustrious author, it is in many ways at the better end of his input into the show. Hear, hear. The City of Death and much of the pirate planet sparkle more, but most of the rest of Douglas Adams' output as script edit has a somewhat misjudged humour and tone for Doctor Who. Sharda falls mainly into the top flight rather than the bottom in these respects, and also dares to broach the Time Lord Legendarium, as had started to become traditional at the end of seasons at this time. We also learn that Sollievin spent some time on Carphil, where the third and sixth Doctors visited. He was posing as the public face of the Borad, but he then ended up fleeing to Trakan, where they decided he was a keeper. Also, young Parsons, who later became older and less likable, went on to run a care home for the elderly, where by happenstance a much mellowed soul deed ended up as a resident calling himself Tom. I like that. Waiting for God, what a good programme. All in all, Sharda is a thoughtful story by one of the best philosopher writers of the late 20th century. Because of its production history, it has been sliced, diced, reconstituted and rendered into more different forms than any other Doctor Who story, and even spawned a whole different series of adventures for the character Dirk Gently, which have also made their way through various media and iterations. So it's a pretty robust and vigorous piece of storytelling. David Brearley did record dialogue for the story.
Brearley.
Yeah, sorry. But it was replaced by his predecessor with a real canine voice during the rather elongated production period of 38 years that it took to complete. A standout and charming performance by Dennis Carey rounds off an enjoyable story. This story was perhaps 2 to 3-ish episodes too short, since they failed to film large parts of it because of industrial action, but that at least has now been put right by animation and audio recordings nearly 40 years later, along with a remarkable extra coda at the end with that bloke that looks like the great curator. Next up, Doctor Who and the Times Cryptic Crossword Puzzle, or the Mafiosa Recreated. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Yay!
Oh, sorry, I didn't get any of that. Can you read it again, please?
Oh, all right, then.
hang on, just typing something into the...
I guess Beth decided he's not going to join us anyway.
Yes, he has done that, yeah. Okay, right. I think we better move on to Doctor Who News. I just had all my pages open.
What about feedback?
Oh, we didn't get it. I just done feedback.
No, there's comments on two separate threads.
Okay, so where's the first one?
The first one, go down to July 7th.
July the 7th?
Yes.
Oh, Lord, that's miles away. July the 7th.
There's a, I put in a picture of the animation with the Doctor and Romana.
Have you?
I said, just a reminder, we won't be discussing Shada.
I can't see this.
Until, but people decided to comment anyway.
Well, I can't see it.
VJ Clark mainly did.
Yeah, but I can't see it.
Well, do you want me to read it?
Yeah, go on.
So... Alan T. Butcher said, delayed due to industrial action. That's our delay. Adam is being industrious. B.J. Clark then said, I honestly don't think it's Douglas Adams' best work. It was always lauded as a lost classic, and even when it was released in the 90s with the script book, it was a might-have-been. Since this new version with animated segments was made, it's become obvious what a disappointment it actually is. Slow and boring plot, none of Adams' usually witty and humorous flair.
That's then, not mine. She's talking about Douglas Adams, by the way.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Then he said, the best bit of this version is a surprise cameo at the end. I replied, agreed. And then I said, shh, I've been avoiding telling people about it. And Laurie Nick
says,
said,
well, all of the Fabstone cold peachy queens in the Doctor Who Skagra is the ultimate. No one can rock a carpet bag like him. We are not worthy. Be still, my heart.
And then I think there's some comments from last week's.
Yeah, there's the T, one lump or two, seven comments. It says, Jeff Waddle, haven't seen it, any version, or read the book, so can't leave feedback. And then Kirby said some stuff. And then.
Well, I said he just left feedback because that was feedback.
Yeah. He said, no, I didn't. Laurie Nixon posted a video. What's all that about? Is that toasting crumpets against the fire?
Yes.
Brilliant. go on there and you can do the Laurie Nix, this story and City of Death are probably my favourite of all Romana 2 period. Go on then.
Who?
You. Laurie Nix says, and I'll...
I don't sound like Laurie Nix. How about Debbie doing it?
No, because she's old. Maybe Mary should do it, because Debbie's done her... Her voice is worn out from doing Alan T. Butcher's feedback.
So which one, which Laurie Nix are we, feedback are we
the
doing?
The one that starts with this story and City of Death are probably...
Okay.
Oh, you got that one, have you?
All right. This story and City of Death are probably my fave of the Romana 2 period. But then whimsy and panache supersede all logic and taste in my world. I recall watching this the first time our PBS station actually broadcasted the unfinished version and feeling such a sense of disappointment that it was scrapped. Luckily, we have a plethora of reconstructions and now have the definitive version to watch. As far as standout characters, Professor Chronotis almost out-doctors the Doctor in his clever but crafty, bumbling Time Lord way. and the fabulous Dr. Skagra's cheekbones should have a show of their own. Incidentally, the Barbershop Quartet on the Quad passed their audition for the Lawrence Welk Show.
That went right over my head. Lillian Robbins, uh-oh.
The Lawrence Welk Show is a variety show that was on at that time, which he always had musical groups perform. Okay. And yeah.
Lillian Robbins said, I don't have the new version, but I've got the DVD with Tom going, shada, shh, in a museum, and I've heard the Big Finish version. It's fun, very Douglas Adams. It would have been one of the best that season if they finished it. They have finished it. What's up with Claire's hairstyle suddenly changing? She took a hairband out.
Yeah, and Laurie Nick says, I think that hairstyle change is supposed to suggest that she's trying to get that dumbass she works with attention. You know, the brainy girl takes off her glasses and is suddenly beautiful, BS. I think it was mentioned in the novelization in some way, but I don't recall.
Thank you very much. That's the end of feedback. Now, I will say, I forgot on the previous episode of the show, John Leeson sent in some, an audio message for FantasyCon, and I forgot to play it last time. And because you lot can't hear it, I can't play it this time either. So we'll have to try and remember that for next time. It wasn't...
You can play it just without us hearing it.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to listen to the show then for a change, are you?
No, please wait.
Yes, it's a little tidbit from. It's not obviously. It's about the convention, not about the show, but it's still worth a listen. I suppose you saw the Jenny Leeson video that I did as well.
Absolutely.
Jenny Leeson, Jenny Linton. I think Jenny's already married, so she won't be getting interested in John. Right then, let's see if the trouble is right when I crashed Google Chrome, when I tried to load the picture I've just put up on the 20 megabyte Doc2 podcast Facebook group, that the BBC have just released a new sort of 13 Doctor's artworks, official artworks. Very, very pretty. I love it. Have you seen it? I've just posted it. Alan T. Butcher likes it. Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? I wish in some way I could incorporate that into our header at the top of the page, but it's in the wrong shape. I'd have to chop some of the doctors' bodies off to fit that. But it's brilliant. It's got all the doctors there, including the war doctors. It's a fantastic bit of artwork. Love it. Debbie's not impressed, but you know, you can't quite please everyone. Right then, Doctor Who News. 20 years of Big Finish.
Ooh.
20 years that Paul McGann has been playing the Doctor. Amazing. So yeah, that's all I'm going to say on that one. That's also where you can sort of nick the graphic that I've posted on the 20 megabyte page. You can just sort of drag that onto desktop and then post it, or you can turn it into a nice backdrop for your own computer. Just saying. Torchwood Serenity. Now you know this app, this face app thing has been going around where people have been making themselves look old or young or whatever.
Yeah.
I did see one of John Barrowman. And stuff like that, which I just thought was really quite funny. So yeah, has anybody apart from me, Debbie, Billy, Billy's wife, Paul? No, Paul didn't try it, did he? That's quite interesting. That anybody else had a go at FaceApp to make themselves look old?
No.
It's depressing and fun in this all at the same time.
Yeah, it was a bit astonishing.
There have been stories out now that the company running that face app are retaining the facial images and using those facial images for not great things. So
I don't really believe that, but. But it is what they're doing is that's a bit sinister, but a bit of fun was had from it. I don't really believe that. Anybody could use pictures off Facebook for, you know, or online pictures for that particular purpose. But I'm sure that if they're doing that, they'll be in serious trouble, won't they, Deb?
More than likely.
John Pertwee Centenary. Today, that's the 7th of July, we mark the 100 years since the birth of John Pertwee. 100 years, bloody hell. Yeah, so that would mean, 1996 when I met him. So, good, grief. Drifted there. British Museum podcast highlights Doctor Who exhibit. Now, we're not going to talk about that because it's another podcast. I'm not going to talk about the target trawl from Doctor Who fans of certain age. The target novelisations of the series are one of its crowning triumphs. And Alistair Pearson, friend of the show, has done several of the covers. Glyn Houston passed away. Legend of British television, of course, he was in two Doctor Who stories. Well, one specific one, that would be The Hand of Fear. It says what he was in. He was in... Awakening. Hang on. Yeah, he played Colonel Wolsey in Awakening, as well as a character, Professor Watson, that's it, from Hand of Fear. He's been in so much British TV, you wouldn't believe, but Kirby probably won't recognise him. David Tennant specials, Blu-ray Steelbook. What? No? Okay, fine. Black Archive wins an award. The Black Archive book on the fourth Doctor story, Full Circle, has won a prestigious Sir Julius Vogel Award for Best Professional Publication. The John Pertwee Centenary Celebration on BBC 4 Extra. Don't know if anybody heard that, but there's some links on DoctorWhoNews.net that will allow you...
You mean the Santarin links?
I don't know. Oh, very funny. That's my joke. Right, point deductive and nicking my joke again. Point out, I'm making my joke again, Kirby. You really don't know any of this very well, do you?
I only take them from the best.
No, you're not going to get a point for that either. Right then, good try though. Doctor Who magazine 540 is out with a picture of John Pertwee on the cover. So it's a bit topical at the moment that obviously with John Pertwee would have been 100 had he still been with us. That they're sort of posting his picture in various places. That's about it for Doctor Who news. For those who aren't on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group and aren't in the FantasyCon phage, when I say FantasyCon, I mean FANTCCON, FantasyCon, as Jenny Linden said in her video. You might be missing out on some good fun things because we do post some very exclusive stuff on that group, and which is obviously exclusive to the convention and exclusive to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. So join the group and see some shots of Jenny Linden. Now everybody's googling Jenny Linden to see who she is. So not you lot, obviously.
I know who she is.
I know. Right, point deductive being absolutely silly. No, damn, I pressed the... you've got a point back. I pressed the wrong icon.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
No. Yes. I tell you about my meeting with Jenny Linden? That's
Please.
Shall I? Okay, right. So, do you want to hear the backstory or just the fact that when I went to meet her? Backstory. Okay, right. So, obviously, last year when IslandCon was on, I was trying to... because Ben did actually ask me to try and source some Doctor Who guests for the convention. I asked Jenny if she could come along to IslandCon. She said yes, and I told Ben, and he said no. So that was the end of that particular avenue of inquiry. So this time I asked Jenny, and she said yes. And being that I'm in charge, I wasn't going to say no to myself. So therefore, she agreed to come along. We agreed on a fee, and I said, "Well, I'd like to come and meet you, and because I'd like to have some nice pictures to post of you and stuff like that." So eventually, after, because I'm quite a busy man, we arranged it for Monday. So on Monday, I arranged to meet her at 1 o'clock at the Spinnaker in Bembridge. I got an email off her saying she was going to be half an hour late because she had to go to the doctor's. So I went along, ordered myself a light sandwich, but the Spinnaker's light sandwiches are actually quite heavy. And then I had to leave it on the plate for half an hour waiting for her to turn up. And then, of course, she wanted to have a light lunch, none of the sandwiches were any use to her, so she ended up having a bowl of tomato and basil soup. So we sat down and just talked about what we expect to happen at the convention, and she started talking about bits and bobs, and she was mentioning she sort of blurted this name out, which turned out to be Tony Curtis. She sort of called him by his sort of real name, and she was seemed to be quite thrilled when I sussed out that she was talking about Tony Curtis. She was in a TV series called The Persuaders, one episode to be precise, where she obviously was with Roger Moore and Tony Curtis. She was particularly fond of her co-actors in quite famous co-actors she's obviously been with during her time. So we did obviously talk about things like that. And she was telling me stories about good and bad experiences she's had with fans. She's had some bloke who was asking her to send pictures, and she actually showed me this sort of she brought a load of pictures along to perhaps maybe scan in and use to sign, and or I could use to sort of publicise her appearance at the convention. And she sent what was a contact print of some frames from a roll of film. I said, will these be any good? Or no, if I blow those up, it's going to blow up all the, you know, the imperfections in it anyway. But when I looked at the frames, it looked like somebody had taken the photographs with a stills camera of Women in Love, all the rude bits, basically. So it was a shot, very small shot of Glenda Jackson's boobs and things like that. And I thought, no, I didn't actually mention this to her, but that's what it appeared to be. So, yeah, but yeah, she gave me a great big pile of pictures, and I just picked out the ones that I thought would be of use. And they were quite sharp. No, I just thought useful for you know, publicising her coming to the show. Just giving it a lift and giving it, you know, make it more engaging with people, because certainly Deb, upstairs in bed, Deb, can't. She just says, oh, nobody will want to come and see her. Well, it might be the case. Obviously, I want people to know who she is, what she's done, her legacy of work, which is quite impressive, to be fair. She's got a BAFTA in her house somewhere. When actually people meet her and find out what a charming, lovely lady she is, she's well capable of, you know, spinning some yarns about her career, that it will then generate some people to buy her pictures. So we've worked out she needs to sell 40 pictures to pay for herself, but yeah, 30 or 40 signed pictures. But if what when I eventually do, which won't be long now, do the stage itinerary, we're going to put her up before a more well-known guest, so the audience will go in to watch the more well-known guest, watch her, realise she's actually quite well-known herself, and then go and see her and get something signed by her, hopefully. That's the plan. But yeah, it was about an hour and a half having a chat, and then I thought, hang on, I better see if I can get a nice portrait of her, because I've got my camera with me, so I could do my own shot of her, because the pictures I've had online are really poor quality anyway, so we did a nice portrait of her. I did it in black and white simply because of all the pictures she gave me were black and white and quite sepia, so she's obviously had them somewhere and they've deteriorated somewhat, so when I scanned them in, we just turned them to black and white, and there's some really nice pictures. Obviously, if you join the FantasyCon page, there's a particular post about it, but there's some lovely old shots of Jenny with Roger Moore and Roy Castle while jumping up in the air holding onto a Dalek. She's quite iconic. Inside a Dalek was Roy Castle holding the top of the Dalek's head, and of course with the legendary Peter Cushing, Robota Tovey, who played Susan, and because obviously, if you don't know, Jenny Lindon played the movie Barbara. Barbara Ian was John with Roy Castle. You were going very quiet, and just listen to me for the sake of it. But yes, so
she's the movie. Plus, every Barbara. Time I open my mouth, I lose a point.
No, they don't normally let me get a word in edgeways.
They never stop you.
Yeah, I mean, her...
Well, I don't think I've ever lost 4 or 5 points, however many I've lost before.
It's, it was quite a treat to meet her and have a nice, relaxed chat. And the funny thing is, when I sort of agreed to do it with a shake of the hand and a kiss on the cheek, where by the time we went to say goodbye, I went over to sort of, give her a kiss on the cheek. She grabbed me by the back of the neck and pulled me back in for to kiss on the other cheek, which I thought was quite funny. But hang on, got an itchy back. So yeah, she's coming to FantasyCon, and she's going to be one of my favorite guests for sure.
She sounds fascinating. By the way, on her website, the first thing up there she says is how she was at another Doctor Who convention. So she considers the Doctor Who stuff to be very important.
Oh, of course it is. I mean, that was one of her first films, if not
plus,
her.
Plus, she mentions in the latest entry that what is it? There is possibly a date in August this year on the Isle of Wight. More news on that later.
She needs to update that, but I'll bet she doesn't.
By the way, she's only had a BAFTA nomination for Women in Love. She did not win.
Yeah. But according to some sources that I looked up, she won Best Newcomer.
Okay.
Yes, I'd seen that she'd won it.
Yeah. Well, someone needs to update
she did,
this.
She did. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress and didn't win that. But she won Best Newcomer somewhere.
God, well, so someone needs to update her Wikipedia page because it doesn't mention.
I think it is on there. I don't know. Don't matter anyway. But she has got. I think pretty sure that. Well, she's been nominated bits and bobs. She doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Oh, I believe it. I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying.
Anyway. Yeah, I was going to talk about FantasyCon news. Now, stuff that I haven't put up yet because I haven't had time to put announcement logos together is that we've got Anxiety Cafe going to come along, and I'm just going to try and... Where's my messages to VJ? Because I sent her the... Because it was VJ's actual idea to have the Anxiety Room, sort of. But we sort of, when I mentioned it to Mick Knowles, who's running the Lego Masters area, he said, well, I know these people, the Anxiety Cafe. And so VJ's idea was to call it the Chill Out Zone. Anxiety Cafe decided it's going to be called Breathing Space by Anxiety Cafe. So basically, we're hoping that nobody will need it. So if you have a bit of anxiety at the convention, there's somewhere you can go out and chill out and, you know, get yourself back together again. So that's really quite a cool place. Yes.
If the possibility of losing another point, IMDb, which does source their information, she was nominated in 1970 for the BAFTA for Most Promising Newcomer.
Oh.
She did win.
No, but it says when my sources that she did. Oh well, it doesn't matter. She didn't brag on about it. I picked that up from somewhere. I'm not going to change it on the graphic because I want it to be impressive for people. But thank you anyway for correcting that. What else we've got going on? Debbie, help.
Sponsors?
No, I'm talking about the convention. The dog just snored, so obviously I'm getting a bit boring at this stage.
Covered it pretty much. I mean, we've got
Cosplay Cabaret, another one of EJ's ideas,
and we've also got the obviously the parade, which we're hoping to
I mentioned that last time. Yeah, so we're basically lengthening the Saturday evening to 7 p.m. we've also got a singer. What's her name again? Oh, good grief. I can't remember her name. Oh, my brain's gone. I'll have to stop podcasting because my brain's gone. Anisia, yeah, she's coming along to sing for a bit.
Are we going to have a quiz?
No, I'm not going to have the quiz, but I have been keeping track of the scores, and this week's good behaviour scores are in last place with -3 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 0 points, it's Debbie. But the winner this week is Mary with 1 point.
Yay, Mary. I don't actually know anything. I just have to be nice.
Hang on, I'm still playing my music. Oh, I stopped it. Right, yes. Yeah, so, well, that's not an occupational hazard for you, Mary, to be fair. Yeah. Yes, Kirby.
Okay, I've gone to BAFTA.org.
Oh, God, he's backing things up now. Yes.
She did not win.
Oh, don't care.
The winner of Best...
it's still impressive to be nominated,
Most
Kirby.
Most Promising Newcomer.
It's still impressive.
The lead film roles in 1970 was John Voight.
I'll let her know that you're not impressed with her not having one. Not winning the actual BAFTA. Anyway,
I'm impressed by her. It's just that you know how pedantic I am.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
I'm so pedantic that I'll risk losing points. That's how pedantic I am.
It doesn't matter. Right then, let's have a look. Who won at .co.uk? Apparently, a shop is still open. I've been advised by Billy, who went to visit the shop during the week.
Went to the shop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh.
Now, Sandown to meet Billy on Wednesday. Some woman jumped in the car just as I was on my way out, so I had to go out and drag her out as well. And then Paul Wilson came along, so we had a little evening with Billy, Anita, Debbie.
It was brilliant. It was a great evening.
That looked like it was fun.
It was good
it
fun,
was
yes.
Fun.
Apart from when I got sand in my shoes.
You just seen the amount of sand I got out of my shoes at the end of the night.
So we couldn't find anywhere to have a cup of coffee, so we ended up going to the Corkhead. Yes?
Didn't you say you went to Sandown?
Yes, we did.
Yes, here we go,
so
yes.
So wouldn't there be sand there?
I thought he was going to make a reference to the... the
fact that it's only 2 minutes away?
No, the fact... the fact that the Wycliffe Bay is nearby and the filming locations for the Sea Devils and stuff like that.
I have no idea.
I did try and correct Paul. I'm pretty sure that he pointed them to the wrong place for because none of those sort of wooden things that go off into the sea that Anita was talking about were in the Sea Devils because that's Wycliffe Bay is further around the coast, but. But obviously, Paul's been trying to show himself out, so tell him one story and not another. But there you go. That's when I get a bit too pedantic. Fortunately, Paul hadn't turned up by that point, so I was able to say, no, it's not there. There are two things, right? You know, when the plan was changed, Debbie. My plan, which I thought was going to keep as a secret until Paul decided to invite himself, I've got no problem with that, was to get Anita and Billy into the car, take them to East Cowes, get Alistair, go up and drive past where Norris Castle is, where then you could see Norris Castle, as in the Sea Devils filming location, and then drive round to Benbridge to just have a little peek at the Benbridge Sailing Club, which is another Sea Devils location, then back to Sandown again. But of course, I can't fit that many people in the car, so we had to go by what we actually did, which was go to the pub and have a chat and have something to eat. But it was really still very good fun, wasn't it, Deb?
Yeah, it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And he might be staying on to attend Fantasy Con.
Billy might be joining us for the con. So, yeah.
Oh, what a nice bunch of people, eh?
It was brilliant. It was a lovely evening.
One of these days, if I ever visit the Isle of Wight, will I lose points?
No.
Will you lose points if you come to the island? Probably if you make some incorrect statements, you might do, yes. Not much going on. Oh, Who Won? Still open. That's what I was going to say about them.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Yeah, the shop is still open. So you go to Ryde, you can see the shop, and they may come to the Sunday to FancyCon. I'm in negotiations that they may actually come along and attend on the Sunday. That'd be quite good, wouldn't it, Deb?
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Not guaranteed, but they might do it. Lavazzi, I'm still in negotiations to get some stock in to sell at the convention, and that's all I'm going to say about them. So if you come to FancyCon, there's a good chance you can buy yourself a Fourth Doctor scarf, like the one we're moving into now as we hit Series 18, and the next story we're going to review, which is The Leisure Hive, which is Alistair Pearson's favourite Doctor Who story of all time. Now, if you listen to episode 12, part 1, and episode 12, part 2, Alistair talks all about himself and Doctor Who and Leisure Hive. And we can do that next Sunday, because I'm working and Deben is here going to the inflatable run. It's the Wessex Cancer Trust. They're filming that. We're sort of sponsors, my business. So we do filming and editing of that event for free. So the Wessex Cancer people can pop it in their website and stuff like that. So we can do it next Sunday. Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah, I can.
Good. So watch Leisure Hive. So now it should be much easier for you guys from now on until we get to the Two Doctors, because all the stories are either four parts or two parts. And we've got, say we did one a week, we've got, we'll be doing Logopolis by the mid-August, although we can't record on the FancyCon even. I think by FancyCon we could be into Davison, you know, if things pan out.
Question master,
yes, I know I'm a question master, but I'm not doing it this time.
Are we going to do K9 and Company?
No, I hope not.
No, please no.
No, it's not a Doctor Who story.
that would fit in there between Legopolis and Port of Doomsday.
No, not doing K9 and Company, no. Sorry. because we're not doing Sarah Jane Adventures in this one either.
Classic Who, anyway.
And we're not doing Torchwood either. This is Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, that's it. I've already covered Torchwood anyway. And I think we might have covered Canine Company somewhere in the past anyway. If we haven't, I don't care. Right then.
No, we have not. We have not. Remember, I keep the database.
Bother. John Leeson's in that. He's Fantasy Con as well. Right then, so we have really dragged this out far too long, I have to say. 2 hours and 8 minutes is on my clock, although 8 minutes of that is us waiting for Matthew Kressel to turn up, so it might not be as bad as I thought it was.
We've been telling him he should have come in, and he didn't.
Yes. I will point out, with Leisure Hive, obviously, a bit of change of production crew, change of look. Not so much with obviously Romana and Doctor and K-9 still in it, but there's an actor who plays, I think it's a Bandrol or something like that, who is quite well known throughout Richard Curtis's sort of what they call it portfolio of programs and films, for that matter. I don't know if you'll recognise him by the face, but he was in Four Weddings and a Funeral. He was in the Thin Blue Line. Have you remember the Thin Blue Line with Rowan Atkinson police series?
Yeah.
Mm-mm. He was the sort of policeman that he thought he had a bald head and a tash and thought he was it. And he was basically cocking up all the time. He was like the enemy to Rowan Atkinson's character. I just hope you recognise his face in it, because I think it was his first piece of work. But he's been in loads of... he did a lot of American series as well, actually. I suppose I'm going to have to look up his name. I can't do that now.
I'm looking through the Wikipedia entry, and I don't see anything. Okay. Nothing is really...
Let's see if I can find it for you while we're actually on air and boring my listeners to tears.
Find it interesting.
Oh dear, that doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence. Leisure. Or as Americans call it, Leisure Hive.
And this is interesting that we're going to have Lawrence Payne. The only thing I've been familiar with him in Doctor Who is from the Two Doctors and the Gunfighters.
Yeah, thank you. Right, what's his name? That's a Pangold. David Haig. There we are. David Haig is the actor that I'm referring to. And what was he? He's, like I said, thin. He's done Four Weddings and a Funeral, Thin Blue Line, Leisure Hive, Blake 7. He's done. Oh, he did Blake 7 the same year as he did Doctor Who.
He'll probably be a familiar face, though the name doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah. Well, if you Google him or something like that, I'll sit down and see his TV and film.
How do you spell Haig?
H-A-I-G.
Okay.
Is Inspector Morse, Boones, Darling Buds of May, all sorts of things. Wycliffe.
Oh, he's been in all sorts of stuff.
Yes, he has been in American shows as well.
And he's going to be in the Downton Abbey films.
Yeah, well, he's quite successful. He's done American films, yes.
He was in Killing Eve too.
Yeah, so he's pretty impressive. But just look at his face. He's more recognisable being bald with a tash now. But obviously he was well made up during the Leisure Hive, and he was also quite young at the time. There you go. And I was wrong about Leisure Hive being his first TV, because he did The Moon Stallion and Blake 7 before he did Doctor Who. Okay, that was interesting, wasn't it, everybody?
No.
Oh, okay. I see him in these pictures from Ledger.
Oh, you recognize him now, do you?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
What's with the weird hair in Ledger High? I guess I have to watch
alien,
it.
Alien, isn't he? Yeah, an alien. But, I mean, I can't believe you guys haven't watched or experienced The Thin Blue Line. It's one of the funniest comedy series of all time. It's right up there with Blackadder.
Well, I'll have to watch it.
I don't know if you can in America, but try and find it. Thin Blue Line with Rowan Atkinson. It's written by Ben Elton, so it should be good, shouldn't it? Okay, I'll shut up. Okay, right, so thank you, everybody. I do apologise for having to wait so long for the most recent episode of the show. That was due to me having to do loads of work, which is still the case, and for people not being available last week when I was trying to put an impromptu episode together at the last minute. So,
it's available on BritBox. I don't have BritBox.
God's sake. Until next time, where we review The Leisure Hive. Thank you for listening, not watching the show this time. Sorry about that. Bye.
Bye. Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.